Can faith and reason work together, or are they somehow mutually exclusive? What role do facts and evidence play when it comes to the Christian faith? This is Reasonable Faith, Conversations with Dr. William Lane Craig. I'm Kevin Harris, and on behalf of Dr. Craig, I want to welcome you to this discussion as Dr. Craig examines apologetics, reason, faith, and philosophy. Dr. Craig, apologetics comes from the Greek word apologia, which means to give a defense or give reasons for why you believe what you believe. It has nothing to do with apologizing for being a Christian.
Right. Apologetics isn't telling people why you're sorry that you're a Christian. It means to be able to provide rational evidence and arguments in support of what you believe. So it's not just your opinion. You've got good reasons for being a Christian.
While we can benefit greatly from great minds, not only in the past, but also in the present, who've done a lot of work in this area, how can we, as lay people, learn apologetics, defenses, arguments for the Christian faith?
Well, I think the best thing that a person could do would be to enroll in a class at a local seminary or Christian college or Bible school that would offer courses on this subject. This would be the very best alternative, because that way you will sit under a professor who knows the field and who can guide you through the issues and through the literature. I would really caution folks against trying to do this on their own as an isolated individual, because the literature out there is so vast, there's so much going on that one is very apt to read the wrong things, second-rate work, work that's really shoddy, and one can just waste a lot of time trying to be a self-educated individual. So the best route would be, first of all, to try to enroll in a class at a local seminary, Christian college, or Bible school. But if that's not available in your area, then I would encourage you to try to find a mentor who has studied in this area, someone in your church, say a missions pastor or maybe the youth pastor who's had training in this when he was in seminary, someone who is older and more experienced and can mentor you through the literature or reading the right books, preferably getting in some sort of a book discussion club where you would be in with several other people and you'd read through a book like Lee Strobel's Case for Christ and do the discussion questions at the end of each chapter. Don't try to just do it alone. The Lone Ranger apologist isn't a good idea. So try to find a mentor of some sort that can lead you through this. And if that's even unavailable in your area, then I think the best that you can probably do would be to get some good books like Lee Strobel's books or my book Reasonable Faith and begin to work through that and perhaps avail yourself of some of the apologetics materials on certain websites on the internet. But if you can get it through some sort of a group or a mentor, that's the best way to get this training.
How old should our children be before we start encouraging them to know this area?
I think right from the start, we can start training our children in apologetics. I feel very strongly about this, Kevin, that we have done our youth a tremendous disservice by not training them in the intellectual credibility of the Christian faith. Typically, what our Sunday school classes and vacation Bible schools do in church is teach children Bible stories, which is fine in and of itself, but we don't teach them Christian doctrine, and we don't teach them reasons why this is true. We just teach them stories. And at some point, we need to graduate beyond Bible stories to teaching them elementary Christian doctrine and giving them reasons for faith, reasons to believe. In high school and college, Christian teenagers are assaulted intellectually with every manner of non-Christian worldview, conjoined with an overwhelming relativism. And our kids are going to become roadkill for college professors at non-Christian universities unless we prepare them for this. And so in the lives of our own children, right from the beginning, we told Charity and John, don't believe this just because Mommy and Poppy say it's true. We're telling you this because we do believe it's true, but don't believe it just because we say. There are good reasons for why this is true. And we would talk to them about what needs to be the explanation of the existence of the universe, or the beauty and design in nature, or where do we get our moral values from? Rudimentary, elementary arguments for the existence of God that can be developed later with great sophistication, but which are presented initially to your child at just a very superficial, childish level to get them to begin to think and to, as I say, encourage your child to realize this is something that that child needs to think through for himself, that you're not asking your son or your daughter to believe this just because you tell them that it's true, but that this is something that they will need to think through for themselves. And that will give the child the permission to do this and the security of doing this, knowing that he or she isn't rebelling against you in thinking through these on their own.
I can vouch for this, Bill. My own kids. My little boy Cody's been thinking about eternity and the universe since he was 4 years old. And he's a smart kiddo, but he's no mega genius. Well, I think he is. But they've also learned since 5, 6, and 7 years old that phrases like "it's true that there is no truth" are self-refuting statements. That argument cuts its own throat. You know, that it pulls the rug out from under itself. And they love to experiment with things like that.
I think that's great, Kevin. One of the things I did with our kids when they got into high school was during the summer when there was no school going on, we would meet with, as a family, Jan and Charity and John and I taught them logic. We went through the basic 9 rules of logic, how to reason, and I taught them how to construct an argument, how to look for fallacies in an argument, and then I would give them little logical problems to solve. I would give them the premises, and I'd say, okay, now use the 9 rules of logic and derive the conclusion from these premises. Now, some were very simple and had no religious significance. For example, if it is Sunday, the library will be closed. It is Sunday. What can you conclude from that? Well, it follows by the logical rule modus ponens that the library is closed. But then I would also give them little logic problems that would have things to do with the problem of pain and suffering in the world, or the design in the universe and how this points to God, and would introduce God and religious subjects into the equation so that they began to reason logically about their faith. And I think this is tremendous training that we can give to our kids.
Yeah, it is. I tell my kids, no sentences have 5 words. And they thought about that and they wrestled with it and they wrote it down and they counted the words. Yeah. No, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And they said, well, that sentence right there has 5 words, so that statement can't be true. So anyway, it's fun for them.
Boy, you know, and think of what that child who has learned what a self-refuting statement is, is going to think when he gets to high school and someone says to him, there are no absolutes, or absolute truth does not exist. That child is going to immediately say, wait a minute, you apply that statement to itself and it refutes itself. So you're doing them a tremendous service by doing that kind of training.
This is awesome. Would you encourage people as well to start slow and learn the basics and then advance as you go? That seems to be obvious.
Right. That is obvious. And that's why I said start with your children at a very superficial, rudimentary level. And then as they grow older, it will get more and more sophisticated. But in one's own case as well, one needs to begin slow. You shouldn't try to jump into Alvin Plantinga right from the beginning. I would encourage folks to start with a book like Paul Little's Know Why You Believe, which is a nice introductory level text, and then move up to Lee Strobel's books, Case for Faith, Case for a Creator, Case for Christ.
And you're interviewed in all 3 of those books, by the way.
Yes, that's right. Okay. Yeah, Lee went and interviewed Christian scholars in various areas, and he included me in those books, and that was a privilege to do that. But then go on to more advanced books like Reasonable Faith or Michael Murray's book, A Reason for the Hope Within, and one will grow more sophisticated in one's grasp of Christian truth. It's an inexhaustible and unending search. We'll never plumb all of God's truth, so it's a lifetime of study.
Bill, you know where else we learn how to do apologetics is by sharing our faith, because we encounter some objections when we share our faith with someone that we may not be able to answer immediately.
Right.
We learn what we don't know by sharing our faith. Often puts Christians in a catch-22. They say, well, I'll share my faith when I learn to defend my faith, But when you share your faith, you learn to defend your faith.
Exactly. I remember there was a young communist who became a Christian. I think his name was Douglas Hyde. And he said when a person became a Marxist, the first thing the Marxists would do would send him out on the street corner to hand out Marxist literature and propaganda, because they knew that person would engage in arguments and discussions in which he would be annihilated by his opponents, and that would fuel his desire to learn Marxism more deeply and so become more committed and a better disciple of Marx. And I think something like that is true in Christian evangelism as well. As we share our faith with unbelievers and we encounter questions and objections that we can't answer, that should drive us to further study. And there's nothing wrong with saying to a non-Christian, I don't know the answer to that question. Let me ask someone else who does, or let me look into it, and I'll get back with you next week. And make an appointment, if you can, with the person to get together again. If it's a friend or a coworker, say, let me look into this, and I'll get back to you on your question. And that shows him two things. It shows him, first of all, that you're not infallible, that you're not trying to do a snow job and think that you're Mr. Know-it-all. And secondly, it shows him that you care enough about his question to go study it and to come back to him to give an answer. And so I think this is a great incentive for learning more, is to be involved in evangelism and sharing our faith and encountering objections and questions that we don't know the answer to.
For more resources on these and many other topics from Dr. William Lane Craig, visit online to reasonablefaith.com. That's reasonablefaith.com.